From each year of the Shana Aleph Shiurim, where questions on different topics were gathered, which hopefully over the course of this year we'll have a chance to discuss. Topic for this morning, question that was raised, is what do you consider the ideal Jew? I.e., modern Orthodox Jew, ultra-Orthodox, black hat or Haredi? How do we know what the best type of Jew to be is? So we're going to open the floor with that question. I'd like to hear the opinion of the Rabbanim. And then if guys have questions further on the answers that are given, feel free to please raise them.
That is your first.
Rabbi Fuchs, who is directing the panel, should have initially defined all the terms that he used. What is a modern Orthodox Jew? What is an ultra-Orthodox Jew? There was one other term that he used.
Black hat,
Haredi Jew. I don't have a clue what he's talking about. My understanding of a Jew is one who's committed to the tenets of the Tayag Mitzvos. Since all of us were at Maman Har Sinai, we received the Torah, and that is really the most significant aspect of what it means to be a Jew. Unwavering, absolute, unqualified, unreserved commitment to Shmiras HaMitzvos and the like. That is item number one. Now, there are many other elements, of course, of what it means to be a Jew, and they include, as Chazal say in a number of different places, Torah, Tchilasa Gmilas Chasadim, Eseva Gmilas Chasadim. Clearly, Chazal, the Gemara says in Yevamos, the Rambam quotes it a number of times, that Shosha Simanim Be'umazu, Rachmanim Ba'ashonim Be'gomli Chasadim. There are three qualities that actually epitomize and really are the very quintessence of what a Jew is all about. One is we are individuals who are compassionate, we are Ba'ashonim, we are individuals who are modest, we are individuals who are Gomli Chasadim, we practice Chesed towards others. So those three are very significant in terms of my persona, in terms of developing my personality. So far we have two things that I mentioned. One is a absolute, unqualified commitment to Shmiras HaMitzvos, the object being to obviously see the Almighty as being the focus of my life, 24/7. B'li hesach hadas, b'chol drachecha da'eu v'hu yasher chasecha. The second item I mentioned is the development of my personality, namely becoming a chesed personality, someone who is concerned with every other Jew and with every other human being, the ability to interact with the world at large. In order to do all that, so I would say that one has to actually take elements of all of the above, all the aforementioned categories. We mentioned Rabbi Fuchs. He spoke about the modern Orthodox Jew, which I think am the classic representative of the modern Orthodox Jew. I consider myself to be Orthodox. Orthodox in the sense of that certainly I subscribe to the doxology of the Rambam, the dogma of the Rambam, the Yud Gimel Ikarim. And I think I'm also orthoprax. I try to practice Torah and mitzvahs. And I think I'm ortho as well, even though I'm not an orthodontist. However, I'm ortho in the sense of both the dox and the prax. And so modern orthodox to me means the following. The way I understand it, the ability to interact with the world at large. And obviously the way to do that is, number one, by acquiring fundamental knowledge of the world at large. I'm talking about specifically in the area of sciences and mathematics and the like. Because there's no question, as the Tehillim, David HaMelech writes in Tehillim Perek Yutes. Am I have the entire hour? Okay. Tehillim Perek Yutes. There we mention every Shabbos morning, Hashemayim Misapin Kvod Keilam Masiyad Avagad Arukiyah. You recall that? Yom Yom Debi Aom Evelai Ladech Habedah. So the first part speaks about studying Drosophilus, studying the fruit fly. You study the fruit fly, you study the heavens, you study the Eustachian canal, you study different parts of the body. Then undoubtedly you will come to a Hakara the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's what the Rambam writes in Perek Beis Yesod HaTorah. The Rambam says that, thank you very much. The Rambam says that if a person wants to come to Hakaras Hashem, let him examine the world. See the majesty of the world. Let him see the beauty of the world. Let him see how the Almighty really has invested the world with unbelievable detail and minutia that really bespeak the glory of Hashem. That's Hashemayim Misabim Kvod Keil. But then in the middle of that particular mizmor, suddenly there's a rather jarring kind of shift. Taras Hashem Tamim HaMashivas Nabesh. Eidus Hashem Nemana Machim Aspesi. So all the Pashani and Bikra, all the Mefarshim and that Pasuk in Tehillim, that Perek in Tehillim, explain there are two ways to come to Ribbono Shel Olam. One is by studying the world, by studying science, by examining the Bria of Hashem Yisbarach, and the other way is through Limud HaTorah. And the Chiddush of this Mizmor in Tehillim, that the one which has preeminence, the Derech which is, shall we say, of primary importance, preeminent importance, is the Derech through Talmud Torah. And the Rambam writes in many places, the Rambam has two different Mahalchim. He points out sometimes that a person has to study the world and examine science, as I just mentioned, in order to come to Hashem Yisbarach. On the other hand, the Rambam says that clearly the Derech to come to Hashem Yisbarach is through a profound study of Limud HaTorah. So in terms of the quote-unquote modern Orthodox, that is to say, my ability to relate to the world at large that comes about as a result of my acquiring secular knowledge. And obviously secular knowledge is important, because one cannot possibly study Torah without having secular knowledge. Namely, in Zeroyim, one has to have knowledge of agronomy. In Nida, one has to have knowledge of physiology. When one studies Kelayim, one has to have knowledge of mathematics or Maseches Kinim. When one studies, for example, other Masechtos Erevin, one also has to have knowledge of Pi. I don't know what Pi is, I can't understand one of the sugis of Maseches Erevin. And so forth and so on. One has unquestionably a very significant to really know the world at large, especially the world of science and math, in order to be able to enhance one's Avodas Hashem. And I guess that's what you mean by modern Orthodox. That's my understanding. That is to say, one who is modern and one who is Orthodox, one who is anchored in Torah. But even according to all of the different positions that were just mentioned, it's clear the most significant is being anchored in Torah. And if you're not anchored in Torah, then you can't really view the world at large. Even the Gdol Yisrael, and this is a big machlokes among the Gdol Yisrael, it's actually machlokes the Mechaben the Ramon Shulchan Aruch, machlokes haposkim and Hilchos Talmud Torah, in terms of how one should view the secular world, the secular studies. But whatever the case is, some actually were in favor. For example, one of the distinctions between the Sephardic and Ashkenazic world, Sephardim were much more open in many, many respects, much more than the Ashkenazim in terms of this specific issue. And undoubtedly, the Sephardim, let's say, represented by the Rambam and by other such Rishonim, took a positive kind of perspective on this. Mashenka and Ashkenazim were far more Shamrani, far more conservative in their approach to the world at large. They were fearful and frightened and apprehensive about all the challenges out there, about all the stumbling blocks that one might encounter, all the mikshalim along the way. So you have a fundamental machlokes of Rishonim, really, probably between Sephardim and Ashkenazim regarding this whole matter. But there's no question that the significance of secular studies is very, very of paramount importance. However, it has to be founded upon a very fundamental foundation of Torah. And in order to acquire that foundation, that takes many, many years. Otherwise, one will be confounded, one will be confused. And as I said, you look at Gedolei Yisrael, who speak about the value of secular studies. For example, the Netziv has a famous tshuva, Meshir Dover, and Rav Kook, both of them, Zecher Tzadikim Livracha, discuss actually the value of secular studies, but they both point out that it has to be certainly on a foundation of very strong and profound Torah knowledge. And Torah knowledge is not acquired overnight. Torah knowledge requires many, many years of devotion, that even my Rebbe, Harav Soloveitchik Zatzal, spent many, many years learning before he actually ventured out into the world at large and went to the University of Berlin and received a PhD in philosophy and the like. But it was all grounded and founded upon a very, very deep foundation of Torah. So that's as far as the modern Orthodox is concerned. What was the next group that Rabbi Schutz mentioned?
Haredi.
I'm sorry?
Haredi.
Haredi. What does that mean? The Pasuk says in Tanakh, Haredi Lidvar Hashem. That one should be actually Haredi Lidvar Hashem. That's a Pasuk in Novi. That Haredi means, Hared means someone who has a Yira Shamayim, someone who has Charoda, someone who's frightened to do with Aveira. That's how one should develop. No question about it. That's a very good thing. The Beis Halevi, you ever read his biography? I assume you did. A very beautiful biography of the Beis Halevi. But the best biography of the Beis Halevi is found in his Perush Al HaTorah, and in his Drushes, and in his Chuvis. Those are the real biographies of the Beis Halevi. Tzadikim, Divrayim, Heimim, Zichroinim. That's what the Gemara says. So that's what I would study carefully. And then you'll see what it means to be a Yirei Shamayim. Even to study the Beis Halevi Al HaTorah, which someone told me is in English. They translated it into English, the Beis Halevi Al HaTorah. That's kedai to learn. When I was 13, I learned the Beis Halevi at my Bar Mitzvah. I got a present, and the tonight was I should learn it, and I did. I learned it with somebody else, the entire Beis Halevi Al HaTorah. Unfortunately, he only goes through Sefer Shmos. He doesn't really go beyond Sefer Shmos. Chabal. Then they told me to learn the Drushes. I saw the Yerush Shammai in the Beis Halevi. He was someone who was a Haredi Jew. Is that how they define Haredi? Maybe you'll tell me the definition of Haredi. What else? Something else about black hat. Black hat Haredi. I gathered there are two types of Haredi. One Haredi, one black hat Haredi. My Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, wore a gray fedora hat. I don't think it's halacha of Moshe Mi Sinai. I never found it in Rambam. you have to wear a black hat. It is true. The pasuk says, "Shayran ibanav amnei Yerushalayim." Black is beautiful, and I guess that's the mark of wearing a black hat. There is also some value. The Gemara says actually that there are certain colors that are associated with Klal Yisrael, colors that are colors of tznius, of modesty, and I imagine that black. I imagine. I'm just asking that black is actually has that connotation somehow. Is able to promote that overall sense of modesty. Okay, so that's Haredi. And black hat Haredi. Wearing a black hat, by the way, wearing a hat in general, is a discussion in the Rambam and the Poskim, whether one is mechuyav to wear a hat for davening. And it seems from the Rambam, it's mashma, that it's a function of minhag hamakom. Depends actually where exactly, where I daven. If that's the minhag hamakom, that's what I should do. If that's not the minhag hamakom, so I'm not necessarily mechuyav to go ahead and follow that particular practice. Did I cover all the bases? I don't know, maybe there's some others I missed. I'm sure I missed a lot. I heard modern Orthodox, Haredi, black hat Haredi. What else? What other genre of Judaism is there? Yeah.
How come the Rosh Yeshiva wears a hat if the community of the Rosh Yeshiva doesn't wear a hat?
How come the Rosh Yeshiva wears a jacket and a tie and a suit every single day? And the answer is because the Rosh Yeshiva is a Rav and feels that a Rav should dress in a certain kind of way. There should be a certain formality how a rabbi dresses, and people should have respect for that particular rav, for his position, etc., etc. That's the reason why I wear a hat, primarily, in order because I think rabbanim have to dress in a certain kind of fashion. The Gemara speaks about itzla the rabbanim. The Gemara speaks about the dress of a talmid chacham. I don't claim to be a talmid chacham. I'm not. Talmid chacham, the Gemara says in Shabbos, also Gemara in Kedushin, that has to be someone, and the Rama defines the Shulchan Aruch in Yerodeah. Misha Yerodeah, Lisa Velitim, Ram Lekamas Hashas. I'm very far from that. But even though I'm far from that, but still I'm the rabbi in the synagogue, and therefore, and Rosh Hashiva, I feel that one should behave and dress in a certain kind of way that is, shall we say, in sync, in tandem, in consonance with that position, and that's why I dress in a formal kind of way. That's how my Rosh Hashiva also dressed, basically, and therefore that's the position that I follow. Yeah. And by the way, it's not a press conference. Rabbi Schneider and Rabbi Green, Shlita, that they also are going to, Mitzvah Shem, have what to say. Yes. I didn't have much sleep last night, so that's why I'm in a mood to talk. What?
Should I not ask it?
Or? Go ahead. On the contrary, your questions are controversial. That's great.
Yes, particularly this one. Which of the three you consider to be ideal?
What, modern Orthodox?
Haredi and then black
hat. Haredi. I'd say these definitions I found to be really, to a large extent, they're just, I'm not into, those who know me, I'm not into, shall we say, putting people in boxes. I find that very, very difficult. One of the most difficult things that I've encountered in my life is how people are tight. Right away, the moment I see you, Michael, right away I come to certain conclusions about you. Based on what? Based on Chochmas Adam Tari Panov, based on, shall we say, Chochmas Apartsuv, study of physiognomy. I don't think I have such kriches, but whatever the case is, I think that's terrible, that we should judge people based on the kippah they wear. I don't judge people, I try not to, based on kippah suga, based on a black hat. Even there are people who don't wear black hats. Harav Shamula Shlita, I respect him immensely. I argue with him all the time, but I respect him immensely. Baruch Hashem. And we have a very good dialogue. It's a dialogue of creative tension. That's the best dialogue imaginable, the Fiyan Yuzdati. That someone who actually does not always accept what you say, and the moment you say something right away, they bow down, salami baloney. No, they actually even debate the issue with you, want to hear different positions. That I hold is a very good thing, a very positive thing. Which of these three? I would like to think that I've taken the best, as Leibniz said, the best of all possible worlds. So there are some elements of the modern Orthodox, of the black hat Haredi, but the common denominator to me, to all of them, is a commitment, an absolute, unqualified, unwavering commitment to Limud HaTorah and to be davuk in Hashem Yisbarach and to try to connect with Hashem Yisbarach as best I can. Harbei, there are many shivim panim haTorah, there are many ways of approaching Hashem Yisbarach. But obviously what we have in common, as Rashi writes in Korach, Aron Echad, Torah Achas, that's what we have in common, correct? One Aron HaKodesh, one Torah, and the same Torah that binds us all, namely all of Klal Yisrael, but there are different faces to Klal Yisrael. There are different segments to Klal Yisrael. Shivim Panim HaTorah, different methodologies. The Ragad Abraham writes, there are 12 Sharim. There are 12 gates to get to Ribono Shel Olam. And each of these gates is considered to be acceptable and significant. There's, of course, there are Svadim and there are Ashkenazim and Baruch Hashem, that we have such a beautiful Givun, multicolored and multi-hued plumage to Klal Yisrael. K'shem Shepasu Ve'emin Am Shavim, the Gemara Tzad Hevden, Kach Deo Se'emin Am Shavos. That's great. That's great. On the contrary, the more, shall we say, by Yaakov Avinu, Chazal comment, Rashi quotes it, Chumash, and the Arachayim HaKodesh discusses it, and the Ramban talks about it, Isha Asher Kibrichos Tuberach Osam. each one according to their quote unquote plumage. So you have your plumage, I have my plumage, everyone else here individually has their plumage, and this is the, shall we say, the collective entity of Hashem Berach HaSavon Bakol. That's Klal Yisrael. That's what we're all about. That's the beauty of Klal Yisrael. The beauty of Klal Yisrael is that, as I said, you have different positions and different approaches. Of course, it has to be within the framework of Torah. It has to be under the guidelines of Torah and under the guidelines of Shulchan Aruch. But again, in terms of people have difficulty putting me in a box. Where do you belong, they ask me.
We've been trying for years.
And the answer is, he meant that tarti mashma. Anyway, in two different ways. Baruch Hashem. May Hashem bless you, Rav Shemula.
Not that
mashma. Baruch Hashem. I was getting nervous. But I'm questionably... That's true. But my point is, I think there are different segments to all these different genres, all these different categories, all different types, and we have to try to choose the best of each, if you will, and each has what to offer. And I think that Baruch Hashem, that this is the beauty of Klal Yisrael, but the primary and most fundamental cornerstone and lodestone and ultimately foundation, quintessential foundation, undergirds all of Klal Yisrael, is the commitment to Torah and to mitzvahs and to learning, limud HaTorah. I think those are the critical elements of defining a Jew. Yeah. You can address to Rabbi Schneider, Rabbi Green as well. Excellent. Baruch Hashem.
One has 12 hours to learn, and he has the ability just to learn Torah. Do you hold that that secular studies are as important, quote unquote, as Torah studies, to take time every day to learn secular studies, even though you have the ability to, for all those 12 hours, to just learn Torah?
Rabbi?
I think I already indicated in my introductory remarks that to my mind, I don't see how a Jew can understand different parts of Shas without some, shall we say, knowledge of the secular world. I indicated that to you, whether it's an Erevin, whether it's a Nida, physiology of a woman. How can you understand Hilchas Nida without knowing some physiology? How can you understand Kashrus without knowing food chemistry? How could you understand Zeroyim without knowing agronomy? Or Kenan and Kalayim without knowing some mathematics? It's impossible. Now, in terms of how one should apportion one's time, clearly one should try to the extent that one can to maximize one's time in terms of Limud HaTorah, no doubt about it. But even Greg Gedolei Yisrael, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and Moshe Feinstein, they're not Paskin Shailas, trust me, and they addressed many, many issues. And Tzitz Eliezer, all these three, Greg Gedolei Yisrael addressed, and Rav Avadya Zatzal, addressed many issues in medicine, trust me, they consulted doctors. They consulted many, many doctors, including Rav Avadya Zatzal and the Tzitz Eliezer, who wrote many, many tshuvas on issues in medicine, and Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal, and also I mentioned Rav Shlomo Zalman Zatzal. All of them consulted doctors. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, you should know, wrote a kuntres on electricity when he was about 18 or 19 years old, and he argued with the Chazon Ish on the nature of electricity. Before he did that, I heard from Rav Levinson Shlita. He spoke to many, many people who are mumchim in electricity, starting as a teenager. He wanted to understand the nature of electricity. What exactly is it all about? He didn't have a secular, shall we say, academic background. He's a Yerushalmi, growing up in Yerushalayim. Spent all his years learning Torah 24/7, no question about it. He was a great Golub HaTorah, but recognized the value of, shall we say, consulting professionals in all these areas when he would write on those areas. And I think that it behooves us to have also minimalistic knowledge. And obviously the reason why I wanted to study secular studies, I primarily... My understanding is, in order to be able to enable to want to have a profession, to make a panosa, there's a mitzvah to have a panosa. There's a mitzvah to make a living. The Gemara says, Rechai Marisha Sha'afta, Gemara Kedushin. And it says in Mike Suba, which I understand because I learned Suba before I got married. So Mike Suba, I didn't learn the first parak. I learned the middle of Masechet Suba. So it says in Mike Suba, Vano Eflach Ve'ezun Vafanis. I will support, sustain. Most people, most Chassanim, don't understand the Aramaic, so therefore they have no problem. That's why they're not obligated to support their wives. They just, it's all, shall we say, they never realize the obligation to support their families and, shall we say, support their wives and what have you. But whatever the case is, that's what it says in Mike Suba. So I have to obtain, shall we say, secular knowledge, number one, to enable me to have a profession. Number two, as I said earlier, in order to be able to understand many, many Gemaras and Shas and many, shall we say, aspects of life. And the fact is that secular knowledge does broaden one's horizons. Again, one has to be careful what one studies, because one can be exposed to ideas that are inimical to Judaism, whether they're in philosophy or in theology and other areas. One has to be, as I said earlier, very well grounded with a very, very deep foundation in Torah, and that does not come overnight. Ideally, the ideal, of course, is to learn for many years, do what Rav Soloveitchik did, and then subsequently, shall we say, branch out in the other areas. But that ideal is probably not available to most of us. It's not practical, not pragmatic, so therefore we have no choice but to try to do both at the same time. But what we have to realize that without a very, very strong foundation in Torah, there's no question we're going to not be able to handle the secular world with all of its challenges, and there are many, many challenges in the secular world. So in terms of my answer to your question, obviously the answer was of a positive nature, affirmative. Namely, there's a need to engage in secular studies. How one apportions the time in terms of the 12 hours that you speak about, there are many, many other shikulim, many other factors that are involved in that. I mean, I have a clear position on that too. But Rabbi Elmaleh asked Rabbi Schneider the question. So
I'm going to go back, take a step back if I could, just regarding the question that the panel is discussing. And then I'll get to the answer. There's two ways you can answer this question that was asked, what the ideal Jew is. One is what Rosh Shiva did, which is to clone from scratch, you know, a person, and how should we direct that person who we're cloning, which is that interesting discussion to have, but it's pretty non-practical for most of us in this room. The second option is to take us and figure out what is my job to be right now, for me to be the ideal Jew that I've certainly be right now. To answer that question requires us to go to each person individually and ask them what you're currently like right now. I mean, when I was in Australia many years ago, so we were discussing to a group of non-affiliated Jews, what is an ideal Jew, what's a perfect Jew? So we asked them, we threw out to the crowd, what do you consider a perfect Jew? So one person raised their hand and said, you know, someone who keeps Shabbos. So I asked politely, do you keep Shabbos in your house? And he said to me, he doesn't, because his parents don't. So I said, so then you're not a perfect Jew? So he looked down embarrassed, I guess not. The guy next to him says, you know, I asked him, what do you think? So he said to me, maybe keeping kosher. So once again, I asked, do you keep kosher? Which point he said he didn't, because his parents don't. So I once again asked him, so that means you're not an ideal Jew? And also, each person went around, gave their opinion, and each person in the end, based on their own admission, wasn't an ideal Jew. So I gave a different definition of what I consider an ideal Jew. And again, it's much more practical than it is, you know, the discussion we're having right now. And that is a person who, whatever state you're at today, you want to be better tomorrow, and then better the next day, and better the next day. Every day of your life, you look at it as a battle where you continue to grow. So to answer the question, it really depends a lot on, before we get into any of the titles, you know, we have 100 and whatever boys in yeshiva right now. So for each of you, the question shouldn't be a hypothetical question one day, what just, you know, what would I write down that the yeshiva thinks ideal Jews. Rather, I want to be an ideal Jew. How do I become an ideal Jew? And since no one here right now is deciding to be modern Orthodox, Haredi, or a black hat Haredi, based on this discussion, the question much more pertinent to you is, what makes you an ideal Jew? And for each of you, it's a different answer. Whatever you're up to right now, the answer is better tomorrow than it was today. That's an ideal Jew. Taking your steps towards these goals, but it requires you to know what better means, which could maybe go back into the first question we asked. And that is, what's considered a real ideal Jew? So just looking at the Svarim, ideal Jew is someone who knows what he's in the world for. He has certain goals in mind based on what he's in the world for, and he goes about his business to try to achieve those goals, accomplish those goals. The ultimate goal we have in the world as Jews is to connect to God. Rosh Hashiva mentioned a number of ways you can connect to God. I was speaking to a student yesterday. You connect to God through looking at a cell, through seeing beauty in the world, which the Rambam, Sotei Torah, Perek Beis, brings down. There's a way to do it. You know, it's a very easy way also. Not easy, but it's certainly very direct, which is to learn Torah. But every person starting from his own place. Some people have to overcome other challenges they may have to get to the stage of being an ideal Jew. But I think that a person has to map out where he is, what his ultimate goal is, and take steps in that direction constantly and regularly. That's part one. Part two, just to the Rosh Hashiva said before, and I think is maybe the most important thing that I would add on to Rosh Hashiva said, even though there's not much that I could add on, but maybe the one minor point I would add on is that a lot of people have these shitas, but they're very dismissive of everybody else. People feel very strongly, this is an ideal Jew, and if you don't look like that, then you're not an ideal Jew. And I think that's wrong. I think it's wrong for, and Rosh Hashiva, I'm sure, will agree with this as well, that it's wrong for a person to feel that he has a monopoly on what's considered ideal. It's wrong. I think passion, having rebbeim that you look up to, that themselves are grounded, as Rav Shiva said, in halacha and in proper thought, and to use them as your guides. Well, everything you do in your life is to try, as I mentioned just up till now, to guide yourself towards the ultimate opportunity of getting closer to God in the world. So that would be an ideal Jew, but that does not mean everyone who's not like that would not be an ideal Jew. That would be arrogant and inappropriate to believe that way. And many people think that they have a monopoly and they really don't. And it goes both directions. People who are more liberal think people who are more extreme are closed-minded. And that's really being closed-minded. It's being closed-minded that you have the monopoly on what it's like. And the opposite is also true. That since I grew up in a certain way, then my lifestyle is appropriate and everyone else who's not like me is inappropriate. That's also being very, very narrow-minded and closed-minded. I think that each person has to respect someone else who they feel is doing everything for the right reasons with proper guidance. With that knowledge, Rabbi Emily asked a question about secular campuses and secular college. So whenever I go to Israel, parents ask me that question all the time. You know, what's your take on secular college? So Shiva has a take on it. I'm sure he'll share with us in a moment. But my take is I'm all pro it. While the things are still on, let me explain what that means. Every person in the world has different things that will lead them to being a better Jew. If, and I capitalized both the I and the F. If a person's better position, he'll be more religiously inspired, a bigger leader. He'll be looking out for davening more often, have better kavana in a secular college. So go to secular college. If a person, by the way, it's an if because most people, not everyone, most people don't do it that way. Most people around other influences struggle in these areas. But there are people I know for sure, being a leader in a campus, being a person who's the guy on that campus, who will be the Gavai Dominion as well as the laner, as well as the person giving the Torah, as opposed to being somewhere else where maybe he's towards the bottom of that group and he feels like he's not doing well and he's very disappointed in himself. So those people really, I think, probably would do very well in secular colleges. However, it's a real if, and it's an if that you have to know yourself very well. And what I answer the parents is that I don't have a position. I want my students to leave Torah Traga, or any, I'm sure everybody tell you the same thing, and to be continuing the path they've started this year, or continued this year, which is growing closer to God, working more on yourself. If for a person, a secular college is a place where they're going to find that, so call a kavod, go to secular college. Again, I think we have to be honest with ourselves. Many of us will struggle a lot in these areas. But if you're not that guy who's going to struggle, but you're the guy who's going to thrive in that area, then certainly I'm very for and pro a person taking opportunities in his life to further and continue to the best way possible the ultimate goal of what he's doing in the world.
If I can just add some horrors. I'd like to start like Rav Shiva did, which is to kind of question the assumption of the question, which is questioning what is the ideal Jew. In a certain way, I think there is no such thing as the ideal Jew, because Jews are people, and people by definition are imperfect. There's no such thing as perfection unless it comes from a Kaddish Baruch Hu. And so therefore, I think we have to look at Judaism as perfect, Judaism as ideal, and recognize that there are certain ideals that HaKadosh Baruch Hu set out for us in the Torah. There's certain goals, certain ideals that we're supposed to try to live up to. But we're not perfect. Everybody fails. Everybody makes mistakes. Everybody has faults and things that they need to improve on. And that's part of the system. That's part of the struggle of how Hashem sets us up in terms of what we're trying to accomplish in this world. The ideal Jew, just to use the phrase though, I think is somebody who's committed to the first line of Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch is a code of law, lots of different details that we're all obligated to keep, but it's not stan that the first line is the Ramah saying Shivis Hashem Negdi Samir. I think that we have to, that the ideal Jew is somebody who, in whatever he's doing, whether it's learning secular studies in a secular college or not a secular college, or learning Torah, or playing ball, or whatever it is that they're doing, is Shivis Hashem Negdi Samir, is that they're placing Hashem in front of them at all times. A person who is living their life trying to be the maximum Eved Hashem that they can be, so, and trying to feel Hashem with them in every single thing that they do, trying to feel a certain sense of dveikus, of closeness with Hashem, so that feeling should permeate everything that they do. Every experience can be made into a holy experience, unless it's an Avera, and a person can find godliness and holiness in anything that they're doing, so long as they have the proper kavanos l'shem shemayim, and like I said, and that they're keeping halacha. there's I'll share a certain idea in terms of our connection to the Torah, which is our guidebook in trying to live a life this way. You know, we just finished the parashas. Avraham Avinu passed down the Mesorah to Yitzchak Avinu, and it says that Avram gave matanos to all his children from the Pilagshim, from Keturah. He gave the Bnei Keturah, he gave them matanos, he gave them gifts, and sent them off to Eretz Bnei Kedem. So I once heard, I think this is Moshe Shapiro Torah, that this is the idea that who's in the Far East was the Orientals and all these cultures that they have some sort of black magic or martial arts and things like that. These powerful ideas that you know that they use to enhance their lives, herbal medicine, all these types of voodoo, all these types of strange, almost somehow spiritual types of things that exist in these foreign cultures. So they seem to be a gift that Avraham Avinu passed down to his other children. But what did he give to Yitzchak? He gave Yitzchak the Mesorah of Torah and Avodas Hashem. And obviously, Yitzchak was his favorite. Obviously, he knew Yitzchak was Ki Yitzchak Yikar L'Chazara, that Yitzchak was going to be the one to carry on the tradition. So obviously, who got the more powerful gift? Yitzchak did. So you can imagine for yourselves, like all these, we look at the world in general, and we look at this society and that society, and we can think, the Goyim have this, and they have that, and it seems so... impressive, but if you think about you imagine like a sumo wrestler, it's like can smash a boulder with his head, you think, wow, that's powerful. But Torah is more powerful because that's what Avraham Avinu gave to Yitzchak, and it's important to recognize the power in that we have inherently in the tradition of Torah that we have, and that therefore when it comes to our lifestyles and our choices. So I think it's very crucial to hone in on that key point, which is that Torah is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's guidebook for us. Torah is the Mesorah that Hashem has given us generation after generation in order to find the best way of life, in order to hit the ideal way of living without getting involved in the distractions of the world, with the alternative approaches in the world, in a way that's able to keep us focused on what Hashem really wants from us. The alternative societies out there, the alternative lifestyles, there may be something to them in certain degrees. The Gemara in Megillah says that Yesh Chachma B'Goyim, if somebody tells you there's wisdom out amongst the Goyim, Tamin, you should believe them. There is Chachma, there is wisdom. But Yesh Torah B'Goyim out there, but don't believe there's Torah. Because the difference between Chachma and Torah is that difference between being somebody who's really connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and somebody who's on a different path. There may be some; they may hit the right target sometimes, but they're not really on the right path. And when we start to grow up, and each of you starts to find your own path in life, and you're trying to discover, well, how do I connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So the labels that we are used to in our society, the black hat and the conservative, reform, modern orthodox, these are just silly labels that society has caused us to pin on certain types of people that dress certain ways or certain styles. And it's really silly. It's really silly because ultimately people are people and people have a job in this earth to try to get close to Hashem. And so my personal perspective is that the ideal Jew is somebody who's trying to live according to the ideals of Judaism, trying their best, trying as hard as they can to reach higher and higher that madriga of growing close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
Question is for Rabbi Schneider Gregory. I understand your outlook on Sikh college towards the yeshiva guy type of atmosphere, but what about for your children? Do you not think college would be wrong?
Take it first. Well, let them go if they want to?
Yeah.
There's a concept called Chanuch Nar al Pidarko, which means that you have to educate every child according to his own unique derech. I'm raising my kids in a way where I don't think they're going to want to, but if my child chose to, and when I say that, but I don't mean to give them a profession, I hope to give them a profession, I hope they have the opportunity for a profession, but if you're describing a secular college that we're familiar with from America, that type of secular college, So I'll be surprised if my children opted to take that route in their life based on the way I'm raising them. Same with my parents, probably surprised the way I turned out based on the way they raised me. But sometimes things happen, surprises happen. But I believe very much you have to support each child in an atmosphere and environment that is the most conducive to his religious growth and his future. If he wanted to go to secular college and I felt that it would be destructive on his religious being, I probably would not let him. If I felt that he was able, some sort of program where it would be, it's not nothing to do with, I don't care about this. The secular part doesn't bother me at all. I'm fine with that. It's much more about what comes along, what kind of collateral damage it happens in the process. So that's my greatest fear. So secular college, again, I'm not against the concept. I'm much more against the challenges that come along with it. So in theory, if there was a college out there that I felt did not present those challenges, and my child would surprise me and decide that's the path he wants to take, I like to think I'd support him on it.
Basically the same idea. I think that there's, like I said, there's chachma b'goyim timing. There's, and I agree with Rosh Shiva that there's an obligation for a person to learn how to make a living and an obligation of parnasa. If secular college is the way which one of my children had to go in order to achieve that goal, and I felt that they were spiritually on solid ground enough to be able to handle the challenges of that scenario, so then, it would be something I would be open to. But also, I'm trying to raise my children with a perspective that ruchnius is the most primary obligation, and hopefully that they would be aware of whatever spiritual dangers there are in the secular environment, and that they should be prepared properly if they had to face such an environment.
So that's a no. I do not want them to go.
I mean, practically, in a certain sense, I would say, the track that they're on is a track which is very unlikely that they're going to choose to go to a secular college. And that's the chavana on my part, that I'm trying to educate them that ruchnius is the main part of their life, and when it comes time to teach them, a parnasa, so we'll figure out a parnasa for them. There are a lot of ways, especially in Israel. The society just functions very differently. You don't necessarily need a liberal arts degree in order to be a successful professional. So when the time comes to find a profession, there are plenty of options out there for how to get them to have a successful, responsible lifestyle.
Josh.
The Rosh Yeshiva spoke earlier about the diversity within the Jewish people. How such a dichotomy hurt us as a religion, and does that prevent or almost promote people from going off the deck?
My argument was that the question was the diversity of the Jewish people. And does that actually hinder, detract, in terms of people going off the derech? Or the argument that I took, I agree that there is unquestionably a formidable challenge in that diversity. But at the end of the day, that's the greatness of Klal Yisrael, is dafka our diversity, dafka the fact that we are different. Each one chooses a path that's in sync with the talents that Hashem has given them, with the kishronos that they have, with the interests that they have. Gemara says, "Ein adam lo meid ela b'makom shelibo chafetz." A person studies an area which you have an interest in. People who pursue professions do so ideally, of course. We're not always in an ideal world. But ideally, we choose a profession that will fit my number one intellectual acuity, my interests. I'm talking about my personal interests. And I think that I agree that there's no question there is a major challenge when a person goes in that direction, challenge in terms of both my faith, my commitment to the Amunah that I have in Hashem, and also other challenges as well, being in the world at large, because the world at large is unquestionably has many menacing aspects to it, especially today. We're living in a very open society, very open world. Technology has gone really way beyond probably what anyone thought it could ever possibly achieve, although it's clear that the sky's the limit. And a lot of it, Baruch Hashem, is being used in a very positive way, and a positive way to promote, number one, areas of very significant improvement in medicine and in science. I'm talking about eugenics, I'm talking about things of that sort, genetics and the like, in terms of studying disease and controlling disease and helping mankind. Those are very positive things, those are very wonderful things. And I personally happen to have an interest in science, and that's why many of my courses are dafka in that area. But at the same time, I agree that there are challenges, but I think the diversity does not necessarily have to hinder, or as I said a moment ago, being a menace. It really depends on how well-grounded one is. If one is well-grounded in Torah, and one is well-grounded in our Weltschung, in our Hashkafa, and one has a very strong foundation, and one actually is really, shall we say, God-intoxicated, as Rabbi Soloveitchik would say, I think one could approach the world at large without a problem. I think one, if one approaches it from that standpoint, from that perspective, and one is anchored well in our tradition and our heritage, then one is able to really, the sky's the limit. I said this story over many, many times, and I think it's a tremendous story. This was told to me by a doctor who approached three great Gedolei Yisrael, this many, many years ago, in terms of what area of medicine he should enter. He was actually Rav Soloveitchik's doctor, one of his doctors. And he approached the Rav Moshe Feinstein and told him he should enter area of medicine where there will be minimal Chilul Shabbos. Told him to become a radiologist, which even Adayom HaZeh is more or less, if you know radiologists, they're able to observe Shabbos without much difficulty. Even though radiology has changed, I have several of them in my shul where I daven, and so I'm familiar with the profession. Then he went to Lubavitcher Rebbe, Alav Shalom, Zecheinu Livracha, Zatzal, and Lubavitcher Rebbe told him that he should enter an area of medicine where he will do the most to enhance the human being, namely people who are suffering from low self-esteem and the like. So he asked him, what area is that? He told him he should become a dermatologist, because people with skin conditions often have serious self-esteem issues and what have you. Then he went to Rabbi Soloveitchik, who told him, enter the area of medicine, well, you'll move the frontiers of medicine ahead. You'll become creative, you'll become involved in new scientific devices that you'll be responsible for, you'll invent, you'll be innovative, new technologies, etc. You'll discover cures for different diseases, that he told him 60 years ago. Rav Soloveitchik. And I think these very much reflect these three Gedolei Yisrael, those of us who are familiar with them. And I think the Rav's answer at least resonates with me tremendously. And I see tremendous value in when you speak of diversity. I think it's a good thing. I think it's a good thing for Klal Yisrael. So many different talents that people have that can be brought to bear to help Klal Yisrael, to help the world at large. I think that's a great thing. I agree, there's a challenge. It's a formidable challenge. And the only way to meet that challenge is to be, as I said already several times, to be very well grounded in Torah and mitzvahs, and in terms of the emunah that one should have. One has a very strong emunah and sees the Yad Hashem literally in every aspect of one's life, then one could go ahead and literally conquer the world. Chazal speak about it. Chazal speak about kibush, the idea of that other Marisha was told, Pru Urvu, Umilu Asaratsu Kipshua. If you read any of the Rav's articles, which I assume you read maybe a few, not yet, soon, Mitz Hashem. So every single essay that Rav Soloveitchik has penned deals with this aspect of kibush, the aspect of creativity. One of his major themes that he was very into was the theme of creativity. That one has to be creative. One has to utilize the talents that one has given, Hashem has given us, and utilize them to the fullest extent. Whether it's in the area of science, in the area of medicine, the area of mathematics, whatever it may be, one has to utilize it. And I understand that. I think I relate to that very well. That's really the mandate that was given to other Marisha and the mandate given to each one of us. That we have to be creative. We shouldn't be individuals simply are following the pack. Individuals who are, shall we say, very homogeneous. We're a heterogeneous society. We're heterogeneous people. And we have to utilize that diversity. But I don't disagree with you that there are certainly many, many challenges along the way. People can go off the derech, and unfortunately do go off the derech. But those people who go off the derech, again, I would argue that, I would posit that primarily the reason for that is because of not so much necessarily, shall we say, intellectually based ideas and thoughts that are not in tandem with Judaism, but primarily because the world out there and its sensuality has engulfed them and has essentially swallowed them up, and they've been taken by the, shall we say, the sensual, sexual aspects of society at large, which are certainly very, very much antagonistic and antithetical to our entire Hashkafa, to our entire world outlook.
can this creativity be used for something like fiction and like literature? And is that a proper use of it?
Why not? If one is a talented writer, I think one should use one's talents. Again, the main issue in humanities, as you know, in philosophy, Akiva, you're probably a little bit familiar, are the sometimes you have ideas that are inimical to Judaism, inimical to some of the fundamental Ikrei Hadas of the Rambam. That's what one has to be very careful about. But if one is talented as a writer, there's no question that one should use one's talents. And by the way, I don't know, there are many magazines today. Even seems to me there's a lot of fiction out there. Even I don't read these magazines, shall we say, Be'ofen Kavua. But recently I've been shown the last number of years, Mishpacha magazine and Ami magazine. I'm not a big chassid of that. I'm a big chassid of the Rambam and of Elazar Demila. But however, I see there a lot of fiction in these magazines, and the fiction is designed to really either convey different types of messages, charismatic messages, moral messages, ethical messages, messages that are really Musar-founded and Musar-oriented, and they're written very beautifully. And you know, you and I both know that something that's well-written can really have an impact. Someone who writes well, there's no question that it leaves the roshen, Rishum al-Nikar. So I think that's a talent, that's not a small talent, I think it's a very significant talent. And one, if one has it, one should use it, Mitzvah Hashem, L'shem Shamayim, and to promote all the aforementioned ideals that I just mentioned.
So I'm going to wrap up. I want to ask a question to the panel. There are many questions that are still not answered. What can you recommend here to the boys in terms of getting answers to their questions in the future when they're not necessarily in this type of program?
So maybe I'll ask you a question. I'm not asking everyone to get the answer to the question. We don't have time for that. But this could either be a nice survey where everyone has to ask questions, give their own two cents, and miss an hour of learning. It's a survey. Or this could be a question where, and some questions lend themselves more to this point, some questions less, but it's a question where you really care. Not you only care what someone thinks, but you care because you actually want this to be your ultimate end. You would like to be an ideal Jew. So I assume everyone who's Israel for the year, because they want to be an ideal Jew, and they want to learn more about what it means to be an ideal Jew. So if this question is the opening to that possibility, so many of you have many rebbeim, both that are here and that are elsewhere, some rebbeim that you see more eye to eye with, some rebbeim that you see less eye to eye with, but different rebbeim. You should ask them all. Ask your rebbeim, certainly the ones here I know firsthand, so I certainly recommend highly you ask the ones here. But those that you know from back home that you've heard different things from, ask them all, assuming that you believe they're all founded strong religiously and they have good leaders and guides to help them out. Your job is to ask them the question also. You don't leave the meeting, this hangout here, this talk with just what we and people think, but rather, and now what? What do I do with that right now? So the question that I guess that we'll leave you with is, and the Rebbe Amalei is really getting to the same point, is what step are you taking right now to make sure that you are going to be whatever ideal Jew you think is the right thing to do? I know for ourselves certainly, and every other Rebbe in this room, we not only we open up, but we welcome discussions like these, one-on-one, sheer settings even, the opportunity to guide and to suggest if you want our opinions on the matter, and even more than just a sheer, but an individual, for an individual to come and tell us more about yourself, what you struggle with, what you're trying to get to in the end, how do you want to get there? So if that's what you leave the meeting with, then this was a very positive meeting. If you just leave with feeling that there are three rebbeim in yeshiva who have different approaches and maybe something very similar, what makes an ideal Jew, then it was nice spending time, good breakfast together, but not much more than that. So I hope that these meetings in general will lead towards the former.
I'd just like to reiterate 2 points. One, what I said before, which is also just hammering home what Rabbi Schneider said, which is each and every one of you as an individual should really try to be pursuing your own relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and also, chase down your rebbeim, ask them questions, and again, don't be thrown off by labels, don't be thrown off by what color shirt people wear or where they dress or externals. But sit down, have a conversation which has real content to it, real significant discussion to it. Be open-minded, think about it this way, think about it that way, and try to discover for yourself what brings you closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what makes you a stronger Jew, and whatever you can do in order to strengthen that should be done, B'Lev Shalom.
MVP circuit.